Hey, it's Dan Patrick. Here's your chance to score with Maaco Auto Body Shop. Join us in San Francisco for Super Week. That's right, a trip for two, airfare, hotel stay, and VIP access to see us do our show. Maaco also giving away 5 free paint jobs and 10 swag bags. Enter daily for a chance to win. Get official rules at danpatrick.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Open to contiguous U.S. D.C. residents 18 or over. Ends 11/23/25.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it, your neighbors know it, heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
This is continuing live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
They're already packed.
You know what to do to get a break.
Okay, do not discuss this case.
Do not, all rise. Sure as exit.
Do not discuss the case. Do not do any investigation. Receive no information. We'll see you in a little bit.
Do you want to mute?
It's okay, the birthday girl gets to sit down. Okay, please be seated. Okay, members of the jury, I want to confirm while you're away, you did not discuss this case amongst yourselves, you did no investigation, and you did not receive any information, is that correct?
Correct.
And has anyone approached you about this case?
No.
Have you seen any media accounts?
No.
Okay, members of the jury, I'm going to be able to ask almost all of the questions. Dr. Kastenstein. I said that properly.
That was perfect, thank you.
The jury has a few questions.
I see.
What was the date of the letter regarding Kathy Beatty?
Oh, thank you for your questions. I have them up here. Am I allowed to refer?
You can look, just tell us the date.
Okay, November 18th, 2016.
And was that letter directed to you?
It is addressed to me, yes.
That's all I'm going to be able to ask as to that. Next, question. Why was Maya's statement about being afraid of the scary movie she saw in Mexico significant?
Yeah. Thank you. That's a really good question. When we were doing that guided journaling, I asked her about her biggest fear. And she's in the hospital right now, separated from her parents, and in her perception, quite a bit of pain, and receiving PT and cognitive behavioral therapy with me, and when asked what her biggest fear was to write about, she chose the movie The Ring.
Next question. Why did you not make... Okay, let me reread it again. Why did you not make an appointment to see Maya instead of just showing up?
Oh, this is a very good question because it's how our lives function when clinically you have a full outpatient schedule and you need to be in the hospital. So think about when you go to a doctor's appointment and your doctor is back to back to back all day long. I'm trying to find time, honestly, to squeeze over, to run over to the hospital to be able to do the consultations that need to be done for my census and then get back to my desk either for my next patient or meeting or to follow up on clinical work. So when you're balancing the two of those, sometimes they're unpredictable. And if you have a no-show, then you have time to run over, but that can be challenging. Sometimes you can call over and say, is Maya available or are parents there? But then also sometimes when you come over there, you're more likely to even find them because they might run to get a cup of coffee or something might be happening. So you're balancing trying to track the family down versus everything else that you have ongoing outpatient.
Next question, would you expect a medical doctor to own a DSM?
Another great question. A psychiatrist is a medical doctor, and sometimes that can be confusing because I'm a psychologist, which means I have a PhD, and a psychiatrist would have an MD. So yes, I would expect an MD to have a DSM. However, not all physicians, not all MDs and specialties would I expect to have that, and many I would be very surprised if they did.
What is the current DSM?
The current DSM is the DSM-5 text revision. So the one that was current at the time of this admission was the DSM-5, and since that time there's been an updated edition of the text revision. It says DSM-5-TR after it.
What was, or when was it released, the DSM-5?
Gosh, that's a very good question. Probably 2 years ago. I don't know exactly, but it came out during COVID, which is really just a time. No.
The question is, wouldn't allodynia make an henna application painful?
I can't speak to that. I personally have not received henna, so I can't tell you how that feels or it doesn't feel, or what someone's perception of pain might be in that situation.
Why did Nemours require an IQ test to transfer?
That's a great question as well. Our transfers, when we go to another organization to ask for a patient to be accepted, have different requirements, and so I can't speak to why Nemours would require that, but I was asked to do it because I make the assumption that that's part of the criteria they're asking for in considering the transfer.
Do you know, with your background, does CRPS have a component of stress/anxiety?
For CRPS and other pain conditions, there is often stress and anxiety, and that is why cognitive behavioral therapy and working with a therapist or a psychologist is a key component of the treatment plan.
How many children with CRPS have you treated or been involved with their treatment at the time you were involved with Maya's treatment?
At the time of Maya's treatment, I had no other patients with a diagnosis of CRPS.
You were asked by counsel if the Kowalskis asked to leave the hospital prior to meeting with you, would you know that if you had not met with them?
I may or may not know that in a typical situation. However, in this case, I was not aware of that.
Who was in charge of giving Maya the reward she earned, and when did that go into effect? What date?
So unfortunately, per my recollection, we weren't putting the behavior chart together with the clear goals as quickly as we would have liked. And so typically in that situation, our child life team members, along with myself and physical therapy, would get together to discuss that. But we weren't able, to my recollection, to put that together and put it in place.
At one point in your written report, you mentioned that Maya, quote, was in an altered state of mind, end quote. Is that correct?
Oh, I would have to see that note. Altered mental status, I believe, is the words I would have used.
I also believe you said that was when Beata was in the room. Is that correct?
In my first time meeting with the family, that is when she did not participate in the session, and I did note in my mental status that she had an altered mental status, and Mom and Dad were both present.
Did you say that Beata was answering your questions to or about Maya, and Maya was, well, in a different state of mind? The term you used, quote, altered state of mind, end quote, sounds a bit Twilight Zone-ish. Could it be that Maya knew her mother could best answer in a more knowledgeable and coherent way than Maya could as a young child, so Maya was just occupying herself in, quote, kid things, end quote, while the adults talked and was not in, quote, in an altered state of mind, end quote?
It's a great question. In many cases, when I am working with children in this age, they let their parents answer because their parents have typically answered or because their parents have the words and the information. However, in this case, I noted it because she had been conversing with me previously and was not engaging. And the altered mental status means that she didn't seem to be present as much with us. And so even if I have a patient who is coloring or playing a lot of times with toys that we have in the room, then a lot of times the kids are still listening and present with us.
I recall you stated that you worked for All Children's Hospital. Is that correct, in 2016?
In 2016, I was employed, yes, by All Children's Hospital.
There were a number of meetings that seemed to be missed because Maya was elsewhere. This therapy being important, was there any reason why other staff had Maya out when she was to see you?
Thank you. It's difficult to manage everyone. Again, our physical therapists are coming in when they have time and they're managing a significant caseload. I'm coming in as I have time. So it's a great opportunity, of course, to make a schedule that everyone can abide to, but unfortunately it doesn't always work out that clearly.
Okay. Were these meetings on a patient schedule or calendar?
No, there was no patient schedule or calendar, to my knowledge or recollection.
And I apologize, I didn't finish the rest of the question.
Sorry.
No, I thought that was the end of the question. Let me just re-ask it. Were these meetings on a patient's schedule or calendar so staff at All Children's Hospital would know to have Maya available?
That's a great question. That's something that we really worked towards. Unfortunately, at that time, we didn't have a really clear system in place to be able to do that, and we continue to work on that even to this day.
Any follow-up?
Just briefly, Dr. Katzenstein, on the very good question about trying to get a regular therapy session, was that one of the reasons why you were advocating or recommending to the Kowalskis transfer to Nemours?
Yes, it was difficult for us. We did not have a comprehensive pain treatment program at that time that would have scheduled appointments and have OT and PT and cognitive behavioral therapy coordinated, and Nemours was doing that, and they still do it really beautifully.
Thank you.
At that point, Nemours did not have an inpatient CRPS treatment program, did they?
My understanding at that time, they had an intensive outpatient program.
It was outpatient. They did have an inpatient psychiatric program, did they not?
I do not know. Currently, to my knowledge, Nemours does not have inpatient psychiatric treatment.
All right. When you said an altered state of mind, the fact that a child doesn't respond to you, that doesn't warrant a diagnosis of altered state of mind in and of itself, does it?
There is no diagnosis of altered state of mind.
Because you don't have any answers from the child. Correct? The child just doesn't answer.
I'm sorry, can you ask?
Wasn't your concern that the child was not responding to you as well?
My concern at that first appointment was that Maya was not engaging as she had previously.
Right. She was not engaging with you, for instance, because she was happy to see her folks. That could be a reason, true?
That could be one reason.
Right. She could be not responding to you because she was tired.
That could be a reason.
She could not be responding to you because maybe she didn't trust you as an agent of Johns Hopkins.
All of these are options, that reasons why. However, in that situation, she had previously spoken with me.
It could be that at the time, she was on so many different meds, it was hard to tell exactly what her base level was. True?
I can't speak to that. I haven't seen her medications, and I'm not a physician.
Well, hang on. You didn't look to see what medications the child was on at the time you were examining her?
It would be beyond the scope as a psychologist to be managing medications.
I'm not asking about managing medications. I'm asking you whether you were aware, for instance, that Maya at that time was on Tramadol.
I would have to see the notes.
Valium.
I would have to see the notes.
Ativan?
The objection, lack of foundation.
Sustained.
Is it true that any one of those have significant psychological potential impairments?
I can't speak to that. I'm not a physician. I do not prescribe medication.
And you don't think it's important to know whether the child has got multiple mind-altering substances in their system at the time you're interviewing them?
Objection.
Overruled. You can answer that one.
I was interviewing her. She had been in the hospital for a period of time, and she had been interactive with me.
But you had no baseline because you never saw her without all of those drugs in her system. True?
I can't speak to the days prior in which I did engage with her.
Any further questions?
Just very briefly. If you could bring up Joint Exhibit 1001-3-26. And for the sake of expedience, Dr. Katzen, I'll represent to you this is your note of October 13th when it comes up.
Okay.
1001-3-26.
Sorry about that. I had to push the button. That was all me.
So I need 1001-3826, please. And then under the histories, do you see this? I just wanted to see if you could clarify the jury. There was discussion of what terms you used. Can you describe what you meant by altered mental status in this note, Doc?
I wrote altered mental status. Maya's pain and current emotional status impacts her ability to report. Her parents provided history described below.
In previous or subsequent interactions with Maya, were you able to determine that she was very interactive and conversant regarding her medical care?
Yeah.
So is what you're describing here a change from when her mom's in the room versus when her mom is not in the room?
Objection. Lady.
Let me just ask you. Based on your observations of Maya, did you notice a difference in Maya's interactive level depending on who's in the room?
On this date, I noted a difference. I did not make assumptions beyond pain and current emotional status.
I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Anderson?
No.
We've got some more questions. Okay. How many do we have coming? Okay, we'll just stay here. Doctor, just to clarify, the Shopkins and Gelato treat you testified Maya received were not part of the reward chart you created with her because it actually never got put into place.
That was my understanding, that it didn't get put into place, but also our child life team is pretty fantastic and they knew things that she would like, so they may have just been things that they got her at that time. But to my knowledge, that behavior chart did not get put into place.
Do you know where the Shopkins and the gelato came from?
I do not. We have a number of very generous people who donate to the hospital, and there are rooms and rooms of toys. And so I'm assuming that it came from one of those places.
Thank you very much.
I have one question.
Sure.
This is on Joint Exhibit 1001-3759. I'll represent to you, Doctor, this is your note from December 20th, and these were the potential rewards that you were setting up for Maya, and was this part of your plan of incentive behavior?
Yes.
And I just think as the jury had the question, this would have been about 3 weeks or so before Maya was discharged from our children's.
Okay. Will you remind me the date?
Okay. Yeah.
I trust you.
This was towards the end of her hospitalization.
Okay. Okay. Yes, this was in the second half to later third.
That's all.
In truth, you have no idea where the Shopkins came from.
Is that the question?
That was my question, and she said, I think no.
I said correct. I didn't know exactly where they came from.
May I ask one more question? Last one, I promise. Was the list of rewards, those are what Maya had conveyed to you that she had wanted?
Yes, they were directly from Maya.
Okay, thank you.
May this witness be excused at this time?
Yes, sir.
Yes, but still under...
You need to remain under subpoena, which means you can leave for today, but you might get called back.
Okay, so no, nothing, no media.
I'm sorry?
No watching anything. No,
no, no, no watching.
Okay. Thank you.
Defense, your next witness, please.
That was going to be a few minutes.
You're suggesting this is a good time for a break?
Yes, sir.
Members of the jury, let's try to keep this to no more than 10 minutes. Do not discuss the case amongst yourselves. Do not do the investigation or receive the information.
All rise. Jurors exit.
Juries out of our presence. Any issue before we go on break?
Madam Court Reporter, do you have a question that Mr. Anderson asked Mark? Or no?
Just the last one?
Anyway, we can find the transcript and deal with it later on. Nothing from the defense.
Judge, I'm going to clarify. Do you know about the Anna's last question as we
do anything? Okay. So we're down to 9 minutes for our break.
Okay. Nothing further.
Recess. Goes on recess.
Okay, please be seated. For our planning purposes, Wednesday will be another day of we have to hit the 12 o'clock mark. But I think that's as I sit here right now, it's the only other day this week that I have to hit a specific time. Anything else before I bring in the jury?
Don't believe so, Your Honor.
No, complaint, Mr. Your Honor.
Let's bring in the jury.
Yes, sir.
Seated. Members of the jury, want to confirm while you're away, you did not discuss this case amongst yourselves. You did no investigation and received no information. Is that all correct?
Correct.
And no one approached you about this case. Is that correct?
Correct.
And you haven't seen any media coverage. Mr. Hunter, your next witness, please.
Defense calls Dr. Richard Elliott.
Raise your right hand.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm the testimony about to give only the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the
truth? I do.
Hey, police court. Tell us your name, please, sir.
Richard Andrew Elliott.
And what is your occupation?
I am an anesthesiologist.
Okay. And by whom are you employed, sir?
Johns Hopkins, all children's specialty physicians.
Okay. Would you tell us where you got your undergraduate and medical training, please?
Certainly. I am from Ohio, and I did a rather unique program, a six-year BSMD program, where I did my bachelor's degree and my MD in 6 years rather than the traditional eight, and that was through Kent State University in Ohio, as well as a medical school there called Northeastern Ohio Medical University.
Okay. And you got your MD from there?
Yes.
And where did you go after that?
I moved to Baltimore for my postgraduate training. I did an internship at a MedStar hospital called Union Memorial Hospital in Baltimore, and then I did my general anesthesia training at the Johns Hopkins Hospital there with the School of Medicine. And then I subsequently spent extra time doing pediatric training for an additional year after that.
Okay. And when did you complete you did a residency and then a fellowship?
Yes, uh-huh.
And when did you complete your fellowship training?
I finished my fellowship in 2003.
And fellowship was in what field?
Pediatric anesthesiology.
And did you become board certified in any specialty?
Yes, I have three board certifications currently. I'm board certified in general anesthesia, pediatric anesthesia, as well as medical acupuncture.
Okay. And where have you, tell us where you went to work after you finished your fellowship.
So after fellowship, I actually was in private practice for almost 2 years. I was in practice around D.C. At a community hospital there that I worked in conjunction with D.C. Children's for about 2 years. And then I wasn't doing as many children as I would like at that point. And so I ended up going back to Hopkins in 2004, end of 2004, really like December of 2004, to join faculty there doing both anesthesia and pain.
Okay. And how long were you at Johns Hopkins in Maryland?
I was there until December of 2013. That's how long. So basically about almost 10 years, but 9 years.
And where did you go in 2013?
In 2013, I moved down to St. Petersburg and joined the group at All Children's Hospital.
Okay. And what is your role? Well, what role did you undertake at All Children's Hospital when you moved down?
I'm an employed physician there, but my roles included really recruitment to do help enhance their regional anesthesia and pain management program was my main reason for going there career-wise.
Okay. And what do you do at Johns Hopkins today?
So today I'm currently the director of inpatient pain management. I also, so I split my time between the OR as well as inpatient acute pain management, and I also do outpatient chronic pain management.
Okay, and is that what you were doing in 2016?
Yes, except for we had not started, we were working on getting our outpatient clinic up and running at the time. It was not active at that time.
So in 2016, tell the jury what the scope of your practice was and what your professional activities consisted of.
Sure. So obviously my care for patients revolved around the perioperative period or periprocedural period, putting kids to sleep and making them comfortable for surgery or other things, MRIs, other diagnostic studies, as well as managing pain on the inpatient side. We have a pain service that's a consulting service that we staff with both physicians and APPs, meaning advanced practice providers like nurse practitioners or physician assistants that we work to help manage pain in all its forms for hospitalized patients.
Okay. Now, tell the jury, if you would, what the scope of your practice is or was in 2016 in managing inpatient chronic pain consultations.
So back then, and as I say, we get a fair number of chronic pain patients in the hospital, whether they've had surgery or they've had other things going on. We get involved with their care. In most of the time, we're consulted by the primary service, meaning the pediatricians, to help with that.
So that could be pediatricians or intensivists?
Surgeons, intensivists, anyone that would like our advice on managing pain for a variety of reasons, acute and chronic pain.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that you now have a outpatient chronic pain practice.
That is correct.
Tell the jury about what that is all about.
Yeah, so just like any physician, we have a clinic in the outpatient setting where we make appointments with patients, and they can be referred to us to manage, help manage their pain in an outpatient setting. A lot of that also involves, we have a multidisciplinary pain program. So all our patients that come to us are met not only by one of the pain doctors, of which we have four. They're also met by our pain psychologist, and they're also met by our physical therapy colleagues. And we meet with the parents as well as the child, and do a two-hour visit for our first visits, as well as then we do follow-ups from that, as well as follow-up appointments from patients that we've seen in the hospital that need further care that we manage.
So, but to be clear, that outpatient pain clinic was not in operation in 2016.
That is correct.
When did y'all start that?
I believe it was, don't quote me on this, but I believe it was around 2018 or 2019 that we really got that fully established, somewhere in that. It was definitely not at that time, but probably at least a year later or so, but we were working on the logistics of that.
So as of 2016, there was not an outpatient chronic pain clinic per se.
That is correct.
At Johns Hopkins All Children's. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. But you were consulting on chronic pain patients on an inpatient basis.
That is correct.
Okay. And as part of your experience and training up to that point, had you had any experience with chronic regional pain syndrome?
Yes, of course. Throughout from day one of my training, throughout my career, from the time I finished my training in 2003 till now, and this, which has been 20 years, it's hard to believe, I've managed patients with CRPS. It's not a common condition in children, but certainly had, and I interacted with, in Baltimore, we had we were associated with Kennedy Krieger Institute, and they had a chronic pain program there that we were associated with and involved in. During my time there. So yes, I've seen that, and now we actually have our own CRPS program.
Okay. As of 2016, were you familiar with the treatment of pediatric chronic regional pain syndrome?
Yes, I was very very familiar with that, and had obviously at Baltimore taken care of patients with that, but yes, well-versed in that, yes.
And what does the treatment of pediatric chronic regional pain syndrome consist of, or what did it consist of as you were familiar with it in 2016?
Yeah, it really hasn't changed in that time period, but the basis for treating pediatric CRPS really revolves kind of around functional restoration, meaning physical therapy, occupational therapy, as well as what we call cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a form of psychological intervention, to name it. So those are pretty much the standard treatment for pediatric CRPS. To this day, at the children's hospitals throughout the United States.
Okay. In your chronic pain practice, did you also have occasion to encounter pediatric patients who were suffering from functional neurologic disorder or conversion disorder?
Yes, for sure. It's not uncommon for patients with CRPS to also have either present, have a comorbid conversion disorder or be misdiagnosed with one or the other, but it's not uncommon to have a functional neurologic disorder with CRPS.
And how does the, well, strike that, what, as of 2016, what was the treatment with which you were familiar of conversion, pediatric conversion disorder or pediatric functional neurologic disorder?
The treatment is very similar to that of CRPS. It consists of very much, returning patients to function, and it's important to highlight that, you know, whether it's CRPS or functional neurologic syndrome, we believe patients and they have true pain and issues. So the treatment really is the same for both of them, is really physical therapy, occupational therapy, and then cognitive behavioral therapy is the treatment for both of those conditions.
The treatment, well, strike that, conversion disorder, functional neurologic disorder, both of those are psychological factors, psychiatric conditions. Define what those are for the jury, if you will.
The functional neurologic disorder or symptom disorder is defined in the DSM, which is really, you know, considered a psychiatric diagnosis. However, when we see patients with that, we don't treat them any different, and we believe that they have pain, and we don't, you know, say that it's in their head and this, and so it's treated the same, and we focus on that their pain is real, whether it's CRPS or functional neurologic disorder, and we move forward with those interventions and support those interventions, the cognitive behavioral therapy, the PTOT, to really get them back to functioning and reintegrated into being a normal kid.
So can you give the jury some idea of what this physical therapy and occupational therapy that you're describing for CRPS and conversion disorder, what it consists of?
Yeah, sure. So it's important to understand that patients with, whether it be CRPS or functional neurologic disorder, really the nature is that they want to avoid moving the extremity, avoid that pain, but the data in pediatrics shows that that's actually the wrong thing to do. That what happened in a lot of these, that the way the brain is firing is it perceives pain or other issues that aren't really there. And in order to kind of get that off switch, for lack of a better word, that off switch on again, you must do progressive physical therapy. And what I mean by that is you start very, very slow, and then, you know, basically work with them and increase that to get that extremity or what they need. Most often with CRPS or functional neurologic, we're dealing with extremities. They need to use it. They cannot avoid to use it, because you'll never get the way your body works, those where your body works, that on switch won't be turned off and start functioning normally until you do physical therapy with that. And there are actually MRI studies validating that, looking at kids.
Protection, bolstering,
sustained.
Can you talk about what
moves and request for instructions, strike?
The jury will disregard the comment about the studies.
Can't talk about what the literature shows.
Sure.
Just talk about what your experience and your
okay,
your training has been.
Okay. No problem. So we do see that really, with support of both the physical therapy, occupational therapy, and with the cognitive behavioral therapy to deal with the stressors that go along with these conditions of missing school, not being able to participate, brings these kids most often to remission.
And when you say the focus is on function, what do you mean?
Well, a lot of times, and we're honest, that in pediatric CRPS or functional neurologic disorder, functional reintegration is very, very important, meaning trying to get the kids back to school, trying to get their social activities up, doing things. And so a lot of times in pediatric CRPS, functional restoration will often precede pain reduction, meaning that getting them back to lives that they in those things in their lives, whether it be school, social, other things, is very important in progressing them to having that reduction in pain.
Okay. Now, is there a role for medication, for pharmacology, specifically ketamine, in the treatment of pediatric CRPS or conversion disorder?
So the treatment for it is as I shared. However, we do believe that medications can be used to facilitate some of those things, meaning we do give medications to help facilitate physical therapy in terms of helping with pain reduction in order to participate in those endeavors in that. In particular, ketamine, we don't routinely use ketamine for those endeavors, especially on the outpatient setting. We do use ketamine for low-dose ketamine for the treatment of some pain conditions, right, mainly as an inpatient.
Okay. And when you say low-dose ketamine, what do you mean?
It's described at what we call sub-anesthetic doses, meaning doses that are way below anything that we would give for, say, surgery or sedation for other procedures or anesthesia.
Turning, perhaps prematurely, we need to go back here, but turning to this particular case, how did you first get involved in the case of Maya Kowalski?
So my first involvement was, I believe I was on vacation. I received a phone call from one of my colleagues about this, about just had I had ever really seen doses as such, meaning the doses, the high doses that Maya was receiving. My colleague reached out to me, most likely because I had the most experience with pain and was working on starting our chronic pain clinic, was just wanting to understand and see my thoughts on these very large doses of ketamine that were reported to be given.
And were you given an understanding at that time? Who called you? Do you remember?
It was Dr. Dolan, my colleague.
Okay. And were you given an understanding at that point of what level of ketamine doses the patient was being treated with at the time that she was admitted to the emergency room on October the 7th, 2016?
That phone call really just was in regards to what I recall the doses that she was receiving as an outpatient at Dr. Hanna's office.
And did you get an understanding of what doses were being used, what was being given?
Shared with me that the doses that were being the
objection to hearsay.
Sustained.
Offered to prove what he was told, Your Honor.
Sustained.
Did you acquire an understanding of what doses Dr. Hanna was using to treat Maya Kowalski with ketamine?
Objection. Still here saying.
Well, that question he can ask.
My colleague shared with me doses that were administered.
Objection. It's hearsay. Move to strike.
The answer stands. Your next question.
And did you, strike that. What was your reaction to the volume of ketamine this young lady was being given?
I was quite surprised and shocked at the amount of ketamine that was reported.
And why was that?
Because they were way higher than any doses that I had ever seen given to a child.
And now, at that time, were there certain guidelines in effect at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital regarding the use of ketamine in pediatric patients?
Yes, we have guidelines, especially for pain management. We have a policy that we have for the use of ketamine for pain, which is, again, as I shared, sub-anesthetic doses or lower doses that we will use on inpatients to help with pain.
And the doses with which you became familiar that were being used by Dr. Hanna, How did those compare with the doses that were in the guidelines at Johns Hopkins All Children's?
They were over 50 times higher than anything that we would recommend.
Okay. You mentioned something that we need to go into a little bit. You mentioned sub-anesthetic doses versus anesthetic doses. Can you make that distinction for the jury with respect to ketamine?
Sure. So ketamine is FDA-approved as a general anesthetic, and we do use it to induce general anesthesia in pediatric patients. And so we use that as our benchmark. So when we say sub-anesthetic doses, meaning doses that are below that we will use to treat as an adjunct to treat patients with various pain conditions. So an example would be, I would put a child to sleep with a certain dose based, we base everything on weight in pediatrics. So I would use, for instance, ketamine 1 to 2 milligrams per kilo to induce general anesthesia. To give them pain, to use it for pain, we would use anywhere from, say, 0.07 to 0.2 milligrams per kilo. So much, much less is what is in our guidelines for that.
And by comparison, what doses did you learn were being given by Dr. Hammond?
Those were, when I did the math, it was up to, if you break it down by hour, it would be 25 milligrams per kilo per hour in some instances.
Now, you've told us that you got this phone call about Maya Kowalski's case while you were on vacation, off service. Did there come a point a day or so later when you became involved in her case on the job, so to speak?
Yeah, I believe when I came back from vacation, I was the doctor that came on service. We rotate, it's very normal, we rotate weeks on the pain service as the doc. So I came on the following week, following her admission. I believe it was the 10th, October 10th, that I came on service.
Okay. And at that time, were you the primary pain management anesthesiologist on her case?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. And can you describe for us, if you need to look at your records, you certainly can do that, but can you describe for us what your evaluation and treatment of Maya Kowalski consisted of on that first day, October 10th, 2016?
Yes, certainly. It was very typical of my routine in that I, whatever patients we have on service from the week prior or the weekend, I usually take a look at their charts and review the records, and then at some point during the day, I will go and see them. See and examine them, and that's a typical. I believe in the afternoon that day, I was when I was able to go see her, and I met, I believe, Mr. Kowalski on that day, and really just took the time to have him share with me Maya's story and spend a fair amount of time listening to him, as well as sharing our thoughts that day as well.
All right. And at that point, on October 10th, I believe that would have been either Sunday or Monday, what was the treatment plan in place for Maya Kowalski?
So the treatment plan had kind of been to give her several days of modified infusion of ketamine, and this is all in the ICU with ketamine, as well as another medicine called dexmedetomidine, and then begin to come down on those slowly in the ICU, watching for any issues, balancing, helping manage her pain with any risk of withdrawal from any of the medicines that she had been receiving.
Okay, now, of what concern was the question of withdrawal at this point?
Well, in my mind, it was still unclear all the medicines that we were still trying to gather information, unclear of all the medicines that Maya was receiving. At that point, I had not had a chance to reach out to Dr. Hanna And so we were being extremely cautious in terms of balancing helping Maya with pain as well as making sure that she didn't withdraw from anything. And that was also for the reason for the addition of the dexmedetomidine. It's a medicine that we use for agitation, but it also works to kind of help with potential of any withdrawal that may be there.
Okay. Now, did you have a chance that day to speak with Dr. Hanna?
I don't know if I called him that day, or it was, I believe it was on the next day, October 11th, that I spoke with him on the phone on the way in my car.
Okay. And did you get a history from him of what treatment he had been giving this patient?
Yes, I called him. One, I just wanted to confirm things because I was still quite shocked at the doses that were reported, and I wanted to confirm myself. So I did reach out to him at his mobile number and spoke with him, and he did confirm that those were the doses that he was administering. He also confirmed that he felt that they were not working either, and he sent her to us as that the doses were not working.
I'm sorry. Objection. Hearsay. Move strike.
More live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today is coming up. Press subscribe now.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
When it comes to broccoli salad, Ohio, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. Everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows that tangy zip. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip in all your favorite recipes. Buy now and get your tang on, Ohio.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it, your neighbors know it, heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs, in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
When it comes to broccoli salad, Ohio, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. Everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows that tangy zip. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip in all your favorite recipes. Buy now and get your tang on, Ohio.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
When it comes to broccoli salad, Ohio, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. Everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows that tangy zip. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip in all your favorite recipes. Buy now and get your tang on, Ohio.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it, your neighbors know it, heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs, in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
When it comes to broccoli salad, Ohio, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. Everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows that tangy zip. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip in all your favorite recipes. Buy now and get your tang on, Ohio.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
When it comes to broccoli salad, Ohio, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. Everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows that tangy zip. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip in all your favorite recipes. Buy now and get your tang on, Ohio.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.